A message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
Well, welcome back, my brothers. This is Bill Maher. I'm here with George Rose, and we are brothers in arms, and we are back with round two of our brother in Christ, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
Hey, Deacon Great. Harold. Great to have you on again for the Dynamic Deacon Part 2 after we had you last month. You know, we just felt like we didn't have enough time to talk about. We just ran out of time talking about all the stuff we wanted to talk about. So thanks so much for taking the time again this month to be with us again.
No, it's great to be with you. Always glad to help out my folks from my home state of New Jersey.
That's right.
And I just want to remind just our listeners, the guys out there in your home state of New Jersey, some of the stuff that you're doing today. And of course, you spoke at our our men's conference about 6 years ago at this point. Hard to believe that much time has gone by. And and now you're a busy guy. I think you were just starting your speaking career back then, and now you're hosting EWTN's Morning Glory, which is a great show. I listen to it a lot with Gloria Purvis and Monsignor Charles Pope. You also do a weekly broadcast of Living Stones on Modern Day Radio, Sons of Thunder podcast for World Ablaze. And you're an avid book writer as well. I think your newest book, I believe, is Father Augustus Tolton, the slave who became the first African American priest. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm working on another book right now on the diaconate. So, yeah, staying busy.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Did you hear? We were talking earlier about your previous state of New Jersey. You know, it's a funny thing. You can never become. You're always going to be a Jerseyite if you grew up in Jersey. Do you agree with that statement? Before I even go on.
Oh, absolutely. You can take the boy out of New Jersey, but you can't take the New Jersey out of the boy.
You cannot. It's so true. Well, we just found out we were supposed to go into a situation, a phase of the COVID crisis where restaurants could have 25% occupancy, and our beloved governor, I say that sarcastically, has shut that down as well. So we are still in purgatorial restaurant and life sentences over here
wow.
in Jersey. So anyway,
So if I were to go back home, I can't go to my favorite diner then, huh?
No. You have to come over our house, and we'll barbecue for you.
Yeah, or a lot of the diners here now, Deacon Harold, they have big tents set up in the parking lot, so you can go eat in the tent in the parking lot.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow.
Not a great option on a 90-degree day, but better than nothing.
Right. That's right.
You get those Mister fans, that shoot off mist. I got one of those for the backyard. They work pretty good. So anyway, what's going on with you and your upcoming ministries? We didn't really get a chance to talk about what you're specifically working on as we move forward, or as you move forward.
Well, it's a little bittersweet because actually I was supposed to leave yesterday for Australia. My original schedule was intact, I would have left yesterday for a tour in Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
But that, of course, has been canceled, postponed, I should say, till sometime next year. And then as well, like I said, all my other international trips have also been canceled. I was supposed to go to Sri Lanka, the Philippines, Greece, Italy, where else? A couple other places, but that's all off the table now. So I'm doing, just to stay connected with people, I'm doing something called the Daily Dose of Deacon Harold. It's kind of little, although I haven't been doing it this week because I've been doing so many interviews and doing some articles about racism and racial tensions and injustice, things like that. So I haven't been able to do it this week. But it's a little 20 to 30 minute daily video blog, I guess if you will, just talking about different topics in the Catholic faith. And then I was doing a Walk by Faith weekly Wednesday webinars. Mm-hmm. And, I do those about twice a month. And as I mentioned, I'm working on a book on the diaconate for Ave Maria Press. Mm-hmm. Mm. And that's a book for the person in the pew. You know, a lot of the books written about the diaconate are written for deacons.
right.
or the formators of deacons. And so there's still a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings about the role of deacons, you know, just for the person in the pew. That, oh, yeah, I see the deacon up there. I see him every week, you know, but they still kind of don't understand what he's supposed to be doing. So that's what this book is gonna explore. So I'm working on that. And I'm working also on some webinars, some online, virtual workshops. Again, because, you know, I'm not able to get out there as much as I'm able to. So we're gonna just try and use this technology and see how it works. There's going to be something for men. There's going to be something on Catholic response to racism. There's going to be something for couples, a couples night in.
Wow.
And then one for apologetics, Catholic apologetics.
You know, there's
so we're just going to make the offering and see how it goes.
The online webinars, they can be unbelievably productive. Our mutual friend Damon and Melly Owens ran their marriage webinar. They had like 38,000 people on that.
Oh, yeah, this is nothing like that. Yeah, I've been participating in those online conferences. And, the format for that is pretty interesting. They get a bunch of speakers, and they probably get 15 to 20-minute talks pre-recorded, like pre-taped. Mm. And then what you do is you sign up, and you can go on there, and you can look, you know, view as many talks as you want. And then after the conference is over, like they put it for about 3 days or so, then you can buy a package.
Yep.
And you can get all the talks,
oh,
you know,
total
so you
access.
Can have access to them after the 3 days. My thing is just a live interactive thing with me. So there's no, it's not pre-recorded. So the people will, you know, it's live and interactive. And I'm going to do each of those topics that I mentioned three times during the month.
Nice.
So in case, like, oh, I want to go to the one for couples, but my wife and I are busy that night. So I give you two other nights that you could. You know, that you could participate if you wanted to. Like
so
I said, this is something different than the pre-recorded stuff.
Mm.
Just going to try it and see how it works out. Like I said, this whole new way of delivering content is very new to me still.
Right.
So we're just going to try see what happens.
How do people find out to get on that? Tell all
yeah,
the people.
Yeah, just real simple. I've been posting all over my social media about it, but if you just go to my website, deaconharold.com, and just scroll down, you'll see right there on right on the front page. Just click on it has icons of the four talks, and just click on any one of those that you're interested in. It'll give you all the details right there.
Wow,
that's
awesome.
Great, Deacon Harold Unplugged.
Damn.
But you know what I like about this format is that it's interactive. It's not like a pre-recorded thing where it's me like actually interacting with people. So I'll give a talk, and then people can ask questions. It's Q&A. You know, so it's actually engaging with people.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
you know, which is what I enjoy doing.
I think you're that kind of
which has been difficult to do. You know, in this COVID time, but you know, what's going to be interesting is how, like, you know, when pastors start opening up and think what the balance is going to be between delivering content in person versus delivering content on, you know, online or virtually.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see what that looks like, because I think, you know, the what things were like prior to COVID-19, I think that's it's caused a shift, you know, in how Catholic content is delivered.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how maybe some kind of hybrid or. So we'll see how that plays out.
It's definitely opened up a bunch of new avenues, which in some ways is good because, you know, I do a lot of work with Japan, Deacon Harold, and I never did a Zoom call before all this started. It just used to be, you know, cell phone calls, and now I'm doing Zoom calls with people I work with in Japan, and it's definitely brought me a lot closer to them just to be able to see them and interact more. And I imagine you're the kind of person, kind of deacon that feeds off of other people's energy too. And, you know, and what you're talking about with your interactive webinars, being able to talk to other people and get response and just not feel like you're just talking into a microphone for 30 minutes. Right. It's got to be much easier to do and a lot more fun, I would think.
No, exactly. You're exactly right. And just like you, I've had to learn to figure this technology stuff out. You know, usually I'm doing an interview, you know, for, you know, a Catholic radio or a podcast or something. And I have to use Skype or have to use Zoom, but I've never really, learned how it all works. You know, like about, so I when I first started, you know, doing it, I was just doing it on my phone. And then I migrated from the phone to, you know, trying to figure out Zoom and lighting and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely been a learning curve for me. So as I get more comfortable with it now, again, I'm still, you know, have the desire to be in front of people, you know, live. So one thing Father has me do, I'm preaching every week at Mass in our parish, which has been nice. So you know, although we have like we're only allowed 25 people in church right now in our county in Oregon, but you know, but it's still a way of just encountering people. You know, that's where our faith is. It's an encounter. I mean, Jesus didn't write, oh, let's go to Capernaum. Nah, Jesus didn't say, nah, let's not go live. Let's just write a letter and send it to them. Someone can just read it.
Right. Good point.
So Jesus went to be with people. So I think there's still something, you know, COVID-19 or not, there's still something about being with people and being in front of people and stuff like that, and interacting with people. And I just don't want our faith to become like a social media thing.
Yeah.
You know, where we're just delivering the faith impersonally.
Yeah, I agree.
Online. So but realizing too that there needs to be balance there. For example, I know in our diocese many of the priests are still going to continue to live stream masses even when the church is open back up, because they're reaching a group of people that they never reached before because of the live streaming. So I think the church is opening up to see this as a new way of a new tool for evangelization.
That's great. And Deacon, you know, you mentioned one of your topics, I think you said on your webinar, is the Catholic response to racism. And I want to chat with you a little bit about that. You know, obviously it's in the forefront of everyone's minds these days. It's what we see on the news, and everything that's happened in the last month and a half. Is just, you know, it's just tectonic plates shifting under our feet every day, it feels like. And would just love to get your take on it. Like, the, you know, Bill and I were talking a little bit about the Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, it's great. We're totally against racism. You know, Bill is in a biracial marriage. I believe you are, too. We're both white guys, though. We don't really... I think, admittedly, either of us have truly an understanding of what it feels like to be discriminated against that way. But what is the, you know, and you know, with the, what is the Catholic response? Like, how are you approaching that topic from a Catholic perspective?
Well, I think one of the things we need to do is kind of define our terms here, right? Prejudice versus racism. So when I say prejudice with regard to race, is what I mean is there's a preconceived notion about someone that's not actually based on fact or objective experience. And that kind of prejudice can always often lead to stereotyping. So, for example, a prejudice that doesn't involve race would be like, here's a good one. Oh, you're from New Jersey. Where's your accent?
as if
every person from New Jersey has a particular accent, you know, and that's a prejudice. I'm not saying it's not racist, of course, but that's just an assumption that's not based on any factual, you know, knowledge or experience.
Or stereotype.
Now, when it comes to race, it's not racist, but it's prejudice would be like this. And this happened to me early this year. Oh, yeah, you went to Notre Dame? Yeah, I did. Great. What position did you play? Now, I've never played football. I went to St. Benedict's, and you know St. Benedict's doesn't have football. You know, I wrestled for 4 years in high school. Never played football. So just to think that, oh, here's a guy who's a pretty good size, and, you know, he's black, and he went to Notre Dame, equals football. When the question they should have asked was, oh, what did you study?
Sure.
That would have been, see what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I'm not saying that statement is racist. I'm saying that it's a prejudice statement because it's not based on any fact or any objective experience. Now, the racism piece comes in. It's prejudice with the added element of saying, I am prejudiced or I'm discriminating because my race is superior to your race.
Mm.
And that's where the racism piece. So it's prejudice taken to the next level, where you're not just basing something that's not based in fact, but you're also basing it saying that my race is superior to your race.
Mm.
And I think that's the difference between the prejudice and racism. So when we talk about race, so for example, the Ku Klux Klan and, you know, the white supremacist groups and, you know, those kinds of things, I think, obviously are blatantly racist.
Mm.
So as far as the Catholic response to racism, I think there's a couple of, well, there's more than a couple of things we do, but I'll just mention a couple right now.
Sure.
Is that we need to see past stereotypes and see people.
Mm.
And see people. You know, the person who did this, I think, very, very well, exceptionally well, was St. Teresa of Calcutta.
Mm.
Very interesting. A lot of people think she was Indian because she worked in India, in Calcutta, and spent started the Sisters of Charity and amazing work that she did. But she's Albanian, actually, and left. And she was actually in a teaching order of nuns, Loreto teaching order of nuns, left that all behind. Went to India and worked with the poorest of the poor. And when she looked at that person who was dying of AIDS or dying of leprosy or dying of pleurisy or some other horrific disease, and a lot of these people, I saw some video from the BBC about, and these are people that literally were like garbage on the side of the road. People mm-hmm. walked by, didn't even look at them, didn't even give them a second thought.
Mm.
And here's Mother Teresa reaching out, her sisters reaching out her arms and grabbing these people and showing them and experiencing the love of Christ in the midst of their suffering. So they didn't have to die alone. They didn't have to die afraid. They didn't have to die in their own urine. They died knowing that somebody loved them, that somebody cared for them. Because when she saw someone, she saw Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to begin to do. And I think we can only begin to do that if, first of all, we recognize that we have prejudices, you know, whether they came into our minds from images we saw on television or just jokes or something you heard your dad say when you were a kid or whatever it is, you know, when those things perpetuate over time, because we know that racism, for example, is learned behavior.
Mm.
Kids, when they play together, they don't have an issue.
Sure.
They're just playing. They're just kids.
Yep.
But over time, somehow they begin to learn that there are differences between people and that those differences mean something.
Mm-hmm.
But for us as Catholics, it shouldn't mean anything. Just, you know, like for me, so you're a black Catholic. No, I'm a Catholic who happens to be black.
Mm.
Because when I die and go to stand before Jesus, he ain't going to ask me how black I am.
Right.
He's going to say, did you pick up your cross and follow my son? Did you feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked? Did you love God and love your neighbor as yourself? That's the criteria.
Mm.
what color you are for Christ doesn't matter. That's why there's no physical description of Jesus at all
right.
in the Gospels, because it didn't matter.
And it doesn't matter to this day. And that's there was an old Andy Williams Christmas song that I thought about. One of my friends actually brought it back to my attention. You know, some children see him, you know, lily white, or some children see him bronze as brown. The point of the song, and it goes on, like every ethnic group sees him differently. It's totally appropriate. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
And the Catholic, actually, Deacon Harold, I heard you talking about some Morning Glory, I think, a couple weeks ago, you and Gloria Purvis and Monsignor Pope, and that's totally acceptable in the Catholic faith to adopt Jesus as your own, right?
100%.
The Catholic faith has always been adaptable to the culture that it's in.
And that's the thing. Like in our church, in our parish in Portland here, half of our parish is Vietnamese.
Mm.
Which brings me to my next point of how we can be more open to Catholic Church. You know, we can host cultural events in parishes and in the diocese where the customs and traditions of other races other Catholics of different races can be appreciated and celebrated, you know, and not feared or caricatured.
Right.
You know, so for example, having something, so say you go to a parish, there's no, you have no minorities, no Hispanics, no blacks, no Asians, nobody. Just, you know, why not invite someone from the neighboring parish that has a rich cultural heritage, have them like an open house. People bring food, So if you're German, you bring a German dish. If you're from, you know, someone from the other parish who may be African or Vietnamese, they bring a dish. And to sit and hear the stories. Here's been my experience in the church. Here's some of the struggles I'm having. And then you see, wow, you know, maybe I could do a better job being more open. Or, wow, they have the same struggles I have. Mm. You know, just appreciating people for who they are. And the cross-pollinization that I like to say, for example, having statues in the church that are of saints of color. Sure. You know, we have a beautiful depiction of Our Lady of Lavang. It's when the Blessed Mother appeared in Vietnam, which is one of the locally approved apparitions. Mm. We have a beautiful statue of the Blessed Mother holding Jesus with Asian features.
That's awesome.
You know, we have depictions of the black Jesus corpus on the cross. I mean, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even some ethical or cultural things that you can do in the Mass, like singing. Now, I don't mean like, you know, crazy statues like Pachamama or anything crazy like that, or dancing. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, legitimate liturgical expressions, for example, dance, singing. Like our Vietnamese choir is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand a word they're saying, but it is beautiful. And the Marian processions they have are just extraordinary. You know, and it's just so wonderful to see the church is so much broader.
Oh, it is.
You know, and so the things that we talk about, like I'm talking about for Mac, and I want to make sure I'm clear on this so people don't say, what is he talking about? I'm not talking about anything that's violating any liturgical norms at all.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I just want to make sure I'm clear because I love rubrics.
Now,
I love as the a Mass is beautiful.
Sure.
We know you're
so
very orthodox.
You can do things that bring out like an ethnic flavor without violating any of the richness and beauty of the Mass.
Well, you know, people forget that the Catholic Church is so multi-ethnic in its history. I mean, you think of Augustine. Well, he was from Hippo, North Africa. Cyprian of Carthage, Clement of Alexandria. Some of the greatest saints in our church. They weren't European, speaking of the issue of race. So we are so multicultural, South America, Asia. That's just who we are. And it was you said something that I identify with 100% is you say you identify as a Catholic. And that's what I do. I identify as a Catholic, and everything else is secondary to that. Do I like my ancestry in Ireland and I've been there? Yeah, but that's not who I am. I'm a Catholic man. And I think that's the proper order of things. And I think as people start identifying with their Christianity first and foremost, I think a lot of these issues just disappear.
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, it's just like anything else. I identify myself as a person of faith first, and now that doesn't mean that I'm putting my you know the fact that I'm black to the side or anything like that. But no, you know, but I live my faith through that lens of my Caribbean heritage, but it's primarily living as a man of God, as a person of faith, because that's how I want people to see me, you know. And because they see me that way, they're able to appreciate the other gifts. The gifts of your Irish heritage or your African heritage or your Caribbean heritage or your Vietnamese heritage or whatever it is. They're able to appreciate that because they're seeing you as a follower of God, as a person made in God's image and likeness.
100%.
And now they're able to appreciate the other gifts that you bring to the table. And one thing I would say is attend like an Eastern. You know, there's 23 rites that are part of the Catholic faith that are in the Eastern tradition. So like there's 11 different Byzantine rites. So Ruthenian. Right, there's Ukrainian, there's Romanian, and or you can go outside of the Byzantine. You can go the Maronite, which are Lebanese Catholics. There's a Syrian, right? There's a Syro-Malabars from India. There's just go and see. Well, this is the Master under the Pope, but this looks like nothing that I've ever experienced before. And you can see the rich. You begin to appreciate the richness and the depth of Catholicism and how it's reached and spread all throughout the world.
Yeah.
You know, Scott Hahn says that went right in his that first talk he gave that spread like that went viral, right? About you know, the book Rome Sweet Home and the talk about how he converted to Catholicism. one of the things that really attracted him to the Catholic Church was that it was transnational. It was the only religion that truly crossed borders from all countries, and it didn't matter. And that the principles and the beliefs were the same no matter where you went. And that was really attractive to him as a Protestant pastor, because it's not the case really in the Protestant church.
Yeah, that's true. And having the great fortune of visiting 19 countries and experiencing the liturgy. For example, I have faculties, biritual faculties, to function as a deacon in the Maronite Rite in Australia.
Wow.
You know, I've gotten to know the Saidna. That's the name for archbishop in the Maronite Rite is Saidna. And I got a chance to meet him, and he's come and heard me speak a number of times when I go to Australia. And he saw the love I have for the Maronite Rite. Mm. Because think about it, that's the language Jesus spoke.
It is, yeah.
So when they're praying the Our Father in Aramaic, that's exactly how Jesus would have prayed it.
Mm. You know,
and that's powerful to hear how Jesus would have actually prayed the Our Father. It's just, I mean, there's so much depth and so much beauty. And I just wish that, you know, like, you don't have to go to another country. That's what's so beautiful about America being the melting pot. You can go to another parish, a local parish. Say, wait a minute, did you say Maronite? Okay, he's a Maronite church about, you know, 4 or 5 miles from my house. I think I'll try and go there one Sunday. Because with the church, so it still counts as your Sunday obligation for going to Mass. Although they refer to it as the Divine Liturgy of the Holy Mysteries.
And the iconography.
You know, but it's just to go and experience that and just say, wow, I had no idea that this was all part of the Catholic faith. It's just really, outstanding.
Well, Deacon, this has been great. Thank you so much. We only have about a half a minute left, but I never knew that you prayed the Our Father in Aramaic before. So,
Deacon, can you lead us or end this show with an Our Father in Aramaic for us?
So I can't pray in Aramaic.
No. All right.
I'm still trying to learn. I mean, I function as the deacon there, but I do my parts in English.
Gotcha.
Usually,
okay.
they're in English and English and parts in Aramaic.
All right.
So, maybe next time you'll have the Our Father there for us.
And I'll do it in Japanese, okay, Father? Deacon, if that works. Hey, thank you so much, Deacon Harold. And guys, remember, please go to Deacon Harold's website and avail yourself of all the great content that he's putting out there.
God bless everyone. Be safe. See you in a month.